It's 32 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call on a Friday morning. She's been threatening to come on my show since I started the station, and I finally got her here. My wife, Barbara Lorello, is here to talk about her new book called In My Hands, My Parents' Journey to the Other Side. Now, she won't go on camera, so those of you watching on Facebook Live, you just get to hear her because she didn't want to go on camera. It's too early in the morning. But it has been published by Strategic Book Publishing. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you want to get it. And, honey, before we start talking about this, there was a great review on Amazon. I didn't write it. I don't know who wrote this, but it said, I read this poignant, honest account in one setting. I couldn't find a place to pause, so I just kept reading. The writer's style created an easy read, although the personal topic was solemn and serious. Enlightening, comforting, and inspiring. How about that?
Amazing, right?
Well, look, let's start off. Very personal subject. It obviously was not an easy time for you. What made you decide to write this book?
Well, I think that there were a couple of things. First off, for me, it was closure during a time that just totally unexpected in my life. And then the other piece of it was getting knowledge out to people, things that I went through, that we went through during this time, that I had no idea how to navigate prior to stepping both feet into it. So I wanted to create just some literature for people to read and hopefully help them through a similar situation.
How hard was it to write this? I mean, obviously there had to be a lot of emotions because there was a lot of things that went on during that year and a half or so. I mean, I got emotional reading it. So how hard was it for you? Did you find yourself getting a little torn up when you wrote parts of it?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think you can go through anything like this in your life and not have an emotional connection with the subject matter. For me, pieces and parts of it, you know, were extremely emotional. But then there's parts of the book that it's just, you know, information going out to the public that I really felt they needed to know. But yes, definitely an emotional topic.
You know, you mentioned in the book that your plan had always been to come back here because you wanted to be here with your parents as they got older. But you also said, but you didn't expect things to turn out the way you did. Well, and not to sound like a jerk, but they were getting older. You were coming. What did you expect? I mean, you knew they were going to get older, but what did you envision that to be like if it wasn't what you expected?
I just think that I had a fantasy of coming back and, you know, helping them with chores and having dinner with them and just spending time reminiscing about old times. You know, it was just this, you know, euphoric idea that I had when I came back.
We don't really think about the end.
Right.
When you think about people getting older, we know everybody's going to die. Nobody's getting out of this alive. But I guess it kind of makes sense when you put it that way. We don't ever want to think about our parents or anybody dying. We know it's going to happen, but I guess it's not something we put a lot of thought into.
Yeah. I mean, my parents were in their mid-70s when I moved back to Connecticut. They were in fairly good health. So I didn't, you know, I didn't contemplate the fact that they were going to move into our home and eventually both die, you know, in our home. That was not anything that I had ever envisioned when I moved back here.
It was difficult at times. There's no question. Yeah. We had some challenging times.
Yep.
But at the same time, there were some moments. I don't know whether you want to call them moments of grace or whatever you want to call them, but there were some moments that happened that made you smile, made you laugh, and made you feel good as well. So I guess even when you think about the end didn't turn out the way we might have wanted,
right,
there were still some positives to take away from that.
Oh, absolutely. I think that a relationship that I had with my mother throughout my life changed drastically during the, you know, final months of her life, where she became a very grateful person and, you know, easy to deal with, which she hadn't been throughout my life. And there were some amazing moments, you know, every morning, us getting up and getting her ready for the day. And, you know, she, the only words that she said towards the end of her life was coffee.
Right.
And then when you pushed her in the wheelchair, she said, "Wee." And those were great times that, you know, they were small, but they were monumental in taking care of them.
You know, one of the things that was interesting, and I hadn't thought about this till just now, it's not on the list of questions I gave you, by the way, so you're going to have to make
okay.
this one up.
Okay, all righty.
The contrast between your parents and the way they approached the end of their lives. Your mom was much more, I don't know whether resigned is the right word,
I think
or
that
comfortable
would be it.
With it. And your father
fought
hard.
Hard.
You know, he always said that he was afraid to die.
Yep.
And but your parents, yeah, they approached it completely different. But, you know, I guess when you think about it, they were polar opposites even when they were healthy.
Correct.
So I guess we shouldn't be surprised, I guess, that the way they approached death was different as well.
Yeah, I always found it interesting. My father had, throughout his whole life, very, you know, staunch Catholic and, you know, very religious individual. And yet he feared death. You know, where, you know, you're supposed to be excited to meet your maker at the end. So I found that extremely interesting. And he fought death right to the end. Yeah.
Well, you and I have had a lot of conversations since we've been together about the medical system, about modern medicine, about the approach that doctors take these days. And one of the things you talk about in your book, you term it white coat syndrome. What do you mean by that?
So don't get me wrong. There are medical miracles that happen every day. And I thank God for the medical system. My oldest son is living proof that, you know, we need a medical system. When I came back to Connecticut, I was alarmed at the number of prescription medications my parents were on. And I did this whole schematic where I looked at the 18 different medications that my father were on and all of the side effects that they
literally
could have.
18, by the way.
Literally 18 medications, right, exactly. And I looked at all the side effects and they were all compounding on each other. And my parents were of the mind that when they went to the doctor for an annual physical or whatever the case may be, that if they walked out with a prescription, a white piece of paper, as I call it, now it's just all electronic. But in those days, you had that white piece of paper, and they believed that that person in the white coat had their best interest at heart. Not always of the mind that that was the case. So white coat syndrome, a lot of people will go in and if a doctor tells them, here, you need to take these five medications or you're going to die, they'll take them. They won't research it. They won't say, you know, what's the alternative? Can I do this through dietary measures, et cetera? So that's what I think is the white coat syndrome, is that we're giving too much weight to prescription medications.
Do you think that it's, mostly older people? Do you think the younger generation is more likely to ask questions, or do you think that it goes throughout the generations?
No, I think it goes throughout the generations. I think, you know, I work in an industry where there's a lot of younger people, and they talk about anxiety and a prescription for anxiety, where, you know, back in the day, we used to, if we were anxious, we would just be anxious, right? Anxious is an emotion, just like happy or sad. You know, and if I was anxious, I would go out and run 5 miles rather than, you know, take a pill for it.
Well, I think about a thing you used to say to your kids, life's hard, wear a helmet.
Yep.
You know, that now everybody wants things to be easy.
Right.
And easy for some people means taking a pill.
Yep. Exactly.
We actually face this a little bit now, even with my mom.
Yeah.
My mom is older. She's the last parent we got left. Even she faces this with medication. She's having side effects from medications, and it's almost like she's afraid to talk to her doctor about it because she's afraid, well, I don't know enough, so the doctor's smarter than I am, so they must know what's best. And we've had to talk to her about, hey, it's okay to ask questions. And I think that's probably, if nothing else, that's what people need to understand.
Yeah, and, you know, when my mom originally got sick, they diagnosed her with achalasia, which I won't even go into that. But she didn't She called me on the phone and she said, the doctor told me I have achalasia. I'm like, well, what's achalasia? And she's like, I don't know. And I said, well, did you ask the question? And she said, no, I didn't. So then I started doing research and then I called her and I said, this is what they're saying that you have. Turned out to be gastric cancer. But all the same, she wasn't even of a mind to do any type of research on it.
Well, and you know, part of the, I guess, and people will read about this when they read the book, and I highly encourage you to read it. When, even in the medical field, when we talk about, well, these are really smart people, they can't even agree on what's going on. How many times did we hear from your mother, she has cancer, she doesn't have cancer, she has cancer, she doesn't have cancer? I think that, not just the fact that everybody wants to give a pill, but they can't even agree on what was wrong. And I think that was part of the frustration that we had as well.
Major frustration for me because, you know, I'm watching her go from 163 pounds down to, you know, less than 100 pounds in a year. And everyone's just kind of standing around scratching their head. And I'm like, she's not eating. Somebody needs to do something right here, right? So yes, I agree that they, one hand doesn't know what the other one's doing.
There's been so many people that have said that, constantly have said, we're saints for what we did. You know, taking care of your parents. What do you say to them when they say that to you?
Well, I disagree. You know, you and I were a team. We worked well together. We got the job done. I don't think there's sainthood involved in it.
Really? Got disappointed by that.
Oh, sorry, honey. But I think what it is my goal and our goal was to, once we found out my mother was dying, is to allow her to die with dignity.
Right.
I didn't want her. And not everyone has the luxury that we did, you know, of being able to bring them into our home. You know, nursing facilities are there for a reason, and a lot of people can't do what we did. But I don't think it's sainthood. I think it's just giving back.
You know, you just mentioned the term dying with dignity. Matter of fact, one of the things that you went through when you were writing this book is, what am I going to call it? And I think at one point that was kind of what you were going with, was dying with dignity, because I think that's the theme that you and I kept trying to that you and I talked about together, is to allow them to have some dignity when they die, because it's hard when you're dying. You know, we saw that it's hard to keep your dignity, especially if you're stuck in a nursing facility or something like that.
Right. And even in our home, my mother had to give up a lot of her personal space,
yeah.
You know, and allow us into that part of our life. And it was not glamorous at all. You know, there's no, you know, as my mother's skin's drying out and I'm having to lotion her for, you know, just to keep her comfortable and having nurses come in, and she was a very private person. So, you know, she gave up a lot of herself, you know, to allow us to help her with this.
Yeah, you know, and they both did kind of fight against it a little bit, because we both listened to them both say at different times, I want to go home. They kept talking about, I mean, they had lived in their home for years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they'd been in that home since the 50s. And so it was hard for them. But I guess they looked at it was, well, it's here or a nursing home, so I guess Middletown is better than a nursing home.
Right. And both of my parents spent time in rehabilitation centers during their illnesses.
Didn't go well.
And it didn't go well at all. I mean, my mother just would not communicate with anyone. You know, she wouldn't eat. You know, my father was the same way. He got some kind of dementia thing going on where he wanted us to take him out of the room, and all this crazy stuff that went on during those times. So they were, even though they weren't in their own home, I really truly believe that they felt more comfortable being with us.
You know, you talked about the white coat syndrome, and again, as you said, we don't want people to think that we don't have any use for medicine. There's another part of the healthcare system that we could not have survived without, and that's the people that came in, the home health aides that came in,
hospice,
the visiting nurses that came in,
yeah,
and the hospice people, yeah, that came in. And this is the I mean, these are things that I think part of what you get through in the book is to let people know, make sure you take advantage of those services, that they're available for you through Medicare, and that if you don't, you're foolish if you don't take advantage of it.
Right. And those, you know, I remember going onto the hospice floor of Middlesex Hospital, and it was like walking into just this euphoric part of the medical system that I'd never experienced before, where there were no beeping and no machines. It was quiet. It smelled like brownies. You know, I swear to God, they had it piped in through the ventilation system, and you know, there were lovely quilts, et cetera, et cetera. My first thought was, why do we have to be dying in order to experience this part of the medical system?
Right. Yeah. I don't think there's, and the other part of it is that one of the other ways that people can get help is to try to get somebody to come in, and so that we can sleep at night. We had to get somebody to come in overnight. We found out very quickly that, you know, you see all these advertisements on television for all these agencies that will send somebody into your home, and they will, and I'm sure they're great people. But the other part of it is unless you have a significant amount of money, that's an awful expensive thing to have. So we had to go a different route, and we found kind of this pipeline that really not only did they help us out, but they were wonderful people, and they're people that we have kept in touch with since your parents have passed away.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that the biggest shock to me as I started doing research to have somebody come in and help us was the things that they will and will not do.
Right.
And
simple thing, like if I have to take your father to the bathroom, we're going to charge you twice as much as if I'm just sitting here sewing.
Right.
But if I have to help them to the bathroom, we're going to charge you twice
right.
as much.
Right. Which I thought, in all honesty, was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But those were things that we came up against, and those I highlight a lot of those things in my book, and I talk about, you know, the different avenues that people can go. You know, if they don't have an unlimited budget, I mean, some people are very blessed and they have enough money to just take care of their parents, you know, in their elder years. We were not, and we had to be resourceful so that we could take care of their needs.
Well, now that it's all over and you know, we're a couple of years past this, I mean, when you look back on it, is there anything you would have done differently?
You know, I thought about that, and of course, ultimately, if my parents were still here, that would be great.
But that really wasn't anything you and I had control
over. We didn't have any control. Right. We do know that. But no, I really don't think there is one thing that I can look back on and say that I regretted that we did it this way. I just think that every step of the way, we took their needs into consideration and what they wanted. You know, if you remember when we started this journey, my parents didn't even have a place to lay their bodies.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're in a cemetery at the beginning of the road where their home was for 63 years and where I grew up. So I think that we were very thoughtful in the way that we approached every aspect of this. And you and I, we worked great as a team, you know, to do what we set out to do.
So if someone is going to pick this book up, which I highly encourage everybody to do.
So do I.
If they're going to pick this book up, what do you, if you could describe what this book is in a couple of sentences, what is it?
Well, it's a description of my journey, both spiritually and practically. There are some practical pieces in the book, such as a power of attorney, joint ownership of accounts, you know, what happens after the end. Because when someone dies, that's the beginning of a whole bunch of other stuff that you have to deal with.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. You know, we look at it, they've been gone now for a couple of years, and there are still times that we have to deal with things that have come up financially.
Right.
And they've been gone for a while now.
Right. Or my father's foot doctor calling us 9 months after he died to see if he needed an appointment to get his toenails cut. So, you know, yeah, but there's, I wouldn't do anything differently. I really wouldn't.
Well, the book is called In My Hands, My Parents' Journey to the Other Side. It's by Strategic Book Publishing. It's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble. Matter of fact, it's available at my house. You can email me. We'll get you one. If you want an autographed copy, we can make sure that happens as well. So I encourage you to pick it up. And honey, you didn't want to be on the radio, but you've done a great job.
Oh,
so
awesome.
Thanks for a few minutes this morning. And we'll look forward to your next book.
Yes, it's in the works.
How about that? My wife, you know, the funny part is she's the one that went to school for computer science. I was the one that went to school for English, and she's the one that published her first book. And here I am. I have no book published. So congratulations
on it. Thank you.
And again, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, pick it up.